Yeah, so what I wanted to do, Kevin, was just talk to you today about black bear spot and stalk. I've gotten a few questions. There, Jillian got a hold of me today on Instagram, and she's struggling to get her first bear, but is optimistic and just wants more information. And it got me thinking, like, you and I have just done it exclusively together, like in spot and stalk format. We're hunting in an area that is, I guess, maybe difficult to hunt bears in, I would say, but I don't know what your opinion is on that, but we seem to kill a bear every year.
This is the Food Afield podcast, a show about wild food ingredients and how to collect them. And now, broadcasting from the wilds of Alberta, is your host, John David Schneider.
Yeah, I mean, I would add to that that I have hunted bears and we've had some success kind of everywhere between the bush line and as far north as the Peace Country kind of thing. We've harvested bears up there too. And in some cases, lots of them up there. So I guess the challenge is, number one, end up in an area where there's bears. But if you would assume that someone would start with that, but I keep reminding myself of when I started hunting a lot that was not information I had. I didn't know where there was deer. I didn't know other than in the forest or wherever, I didn't know where to go exactly. And that usually is kind of step number one.
I just pulled it up. I misquoted yesterday. I was on Mark's podcast last night, actually, with a young guy, a biologist out in Ontario, Adam Weir. And he's a fish biologist. He is a bear hunting enthusiast. And of course, he's baiting. And so anyways, it was a good conversation. But I said that I thought there was about 25,000 bears, black bears in Alberta. And I was wrong by about half.
I would have corrected you too. I heard there's like 40-ish plus, something like that.
Yeah, 36,000 to 40,000. So that's 84 bears per 1,000 kilometers square. But of course, you and I know that what about a quarter of the province? There are no black bears in the grassland areas, or I should say, there's very few.
Yeah, I do know of one being harvested down there, but it is like the major exception to the rule. So I would agree with you. I mean, you could divide the province almost in half. I think half of it is green zone bush, like boreal forest. And that there are bears in the Aspen Parkland, that's for sure. But you start to get into the real good density, I would say, when you start getting into the forested areas. But
yeah, the boreal forest, right? Yeah. Basically, what I wanted to do was just sort of a how-to or how we spot and stalk black bears, because I was thinking about it, and we've talked about this before, and we're just sort of successful every time we go out and try to do it. That's just a statement of fact. And I wonder what that is, what we can attribute that to. I mean, part of it is, as you say, we're just in a place where there's bears, of course. But I also wanted to get into the what we're looking for, where we're looking for it, when we're looking for it, and then the ultimate, you know, how to do it kind of thing. We can talk about the evolution of how we've hunted bears and how that's changed recently. So all of that sort of stuff. The other thing that's changed too, I guess, Kevin, is the listenership for the show has literally doubled in the last month. So there's going to be a lot of people listening to this episode who aren't familiar with who you are. So, which is kind of cool. You're on the show a lot. And of course, we hunt together all the time. So who are you and what do you do?
My name is Kevin Gosselin. I predominantly point cameras at the food world for a living. And have for the last number of years been buried in the niche of wild food, which includes heavy on the forage stuff and hunting and fishing and fungus as well. So, and then the intersection of all that stuff in culinary, that's kind of where my career has taken me in the last number of years. So from the wilds in season 10 of production, and it's kind of a deep dive into the flavors of the place of mostly Western Canada, although we've kind of shot all over the country and dabbled in Europe, and maybe doing some other international work in the next year. So that's mostly what I do. I spend my time, I found I'm becoming a bit of a weird character in that I spend so much time thinking about this stuff because I teach, I guide plant-based stuff, like introducing people to ecosystems and introducing them to plants and fungus. I teach that about 2 to 3 months a year now, which was never part of my career plan. But it means my head's in that game a lot. So the last few weeks I've been really deep diving into Latin names of seaweeds and shore plants on the Pacific Ocean, because I'm about to be sea kayaking for the better part of 3 weeks. So anyway, just kind of that's where life has pointed me. And it's an intriguing place to be.
The camp that we usually go to hunt bears as well, that's been, you know, right from day one with From the Wild, hasn't it?
Season two is when that camp was formed, and that was you and I and Jeff that formed that one, kind of looking for a place to hunker down for the night, and found a place to, well, kind of intended to find a place for the night, and ended up finding our bush home, which is suits me just fine. You know me, I'm kind of the kind of guy that gets attached to place pretty hard, so once we kind of settled roots there, it's become home.
I miss it every time I'm not around it for a certain amount of time. Anxious to get back there this May as well. So let's start there. We are spot and stalking bears. When do we do this? And well, why?
Well, it depends how much you want to bonk your head against the wall. One of the early problems is that we had success at bear hunting one of the most memorable bears that we ever harvested, which was like a real blonde, big bear and blonde.
Golden bear.
That was April 26th. And so, you know, you go back the next year on April 26th thinking I've really got this. And then as a still, you know, pretty green hunter of bears, and there's snow everywhere and there's no green, and you go, what the heck? I thought I had this dialed. And so we've been spending the last better part of a decade figuring out which weeks to go. And I can tell you from both, because bears are highly related to the plant stuff, spring is really hard to peg down. I can tell you within a week or two, or maybe even like I could get really close to tell you when peak gold leaf fall beautiful is and when I can point cameras at that. But if you said, tell me when to go find fiddleheads, it would be, I'd need a margin of error of about 3 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say a month, but yeah.
Almost a month. So We target now, I target mid-May as kind of the entry point into making a move. That's not to say you can't start earlier. And then we tend to have success kind of the last half of May here. Of course, that'll vary depending on where you are.
Yeah. And I guess what Kevin says, you know, of course, black bears are plant centric, but they're a specific plant centric from what we've seen. You know, the dandelions, when the dandelions are up in, and of course they're eating grass, like the first thing they'll eat when they come out of their den is they'll chow down on anything green, which is grass. It gets their fecal system moving. But that's not really what we're aiming for. What we're aiming for is the greening up of the clover that are seeded in the ditches and the right of ways of all of these cut lines and trails and roads. But dandelions, to me, that seems to be the key thing. When I've seen bears chowing down, would you associate that with dandelions, or am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong. And I have seen that over and over and over and over and over and over. But I would push back on, like, there's a funny tell. It's kind of like looking in a fish in their guts to see what insects they're eating. I've butchered enough bears to know to look in their mouth and see what they're chewing on. And I would say, yeah, dandelions are part of the equation, but I would say you nailed it earlier on in what you were saying, in that anything green, because they're trying hard not to die at that time of year, especially the earlier you get. If you've got some bears coming out of hibernation early and they don't have a lot, there's just not a lot of options for them. So they're going to, like, the bush is brown, and it's hard to describe to somebody how brown a forest can be at that time of year, but it is uniformly brown. And so anything green is going to be what they're after. I agree with you entirely that once they have choice, they're going to go after those dandelions and clovers and those types of more nutrient dense foods for sure.
If I was to tell somebody, here is definitively how you hunt spot and stalk black bears, you find the richest, greenest patch of clover and dandelions that you can. But then when you think back on all the bears that we've harvested over the years, they've been spread out in areas like just almost at random. I think of the bear that you shot last year, and that was in a cut block. Was there a good amount of green? Like, I wasn't with you when you collected that bear. Was it? Oh, no. That was the year before you shot it in the cut block, right?
Yep. Correct.
So was there any green around you? I mean, of course, there was some, but
in that cut block, there was pockets of water. And so there was green stuff around the water. And that's what that bear was after. The one I shot last year was in that same spot where we saw that giant bear. So that little guy was eating the same dandelion scenario as that big guy.
The moose bear.
Yeah. And I would agree with you that the only thing that worked last year was persistence. And I would say that there's been a few years like that where persistence is the only reason I can say, yeah, I harvest one every year. Because if I had just gone for 2 or 3 days and then gone, well, didn't get one, I'm always the guy in camp who's going, just got to put in your time here. This is one of those hunts. And with whitetail, it's different, or deer, it's different, because you're putting in your time to maybe shoot a bigger buck, but you're not usually putting in days and days and days and days and days just to shoot an animal. And so with black bear, it tends to be more that kind of hunt. The good news for that is I love being in the field in May. It's so nice to get out from, you know, you're just getting out of winter, and it's really lovely to just be outside. The weather is just getting great here. No bugs. It's just a nice time to be out. Mm-hmm. So it's not a difficult thing to want to spend the time out in May and put the time in. But I do think that's the final step. The first few steps, you're right, are identify where the bears are. Then two, what are they feeding on? And how do you find that? And that really is about hunting green, as we've discussed. And then the next, there's all kinds of next steps. The big tough one, as you know, is then you see a bear. Then what? Mm-hmm. Then what do you do, John?
You be patient. That's what I said last night on Mark's podcast, you know, because they were asking me about the couple of bears that I've shot spot and stalking. They've both been close encounters. The first one with my recurve in BC was at 12 steps. And then the one 2 years ago with you, that was at about 40 something. We never paced it off, but both sort of quote unquote bow range. And it was both those situations were a case of see the bear, you know, a quarter of a mile away. You know, that's what I said, is like, if the bear is happy and you're happy, then don't do anything is my advice.
Just amen. Of the bear stalks. Yeah. Of the bear stalks I've seen blown, it's because people make a move too fast and too hard. Mm-hmm. And or when the bear is looking at you, you're moving. And that's just a big, big faux pas. But you're right. The patience thing is so key. And you and I would both agree, because we've spent an awful lot of time together hunting bears, that it's because that bear's there for a reason. That bear is there to eat and put on calories and, like I said, not die. So it's not really that interested in moving along, typically. I mean, sometimes they will, but typically they're just there to bury the calories into them and get their bodies back into condition to be healthy and ready to breed, I guess. They're just trying to get her done. And if you take your time, that can often lead to success, very often.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, I don't have enough data points to definitively go, well, this is what you do in this situation. Like, in both of these situations, I guess maybe I was just lucky. I was in a spot where the bears eventually wanted to be, and they walked towards me. But it was still just a function of, if you stay still and you observe your surroundings, I feel like instinctively you will have an idea of what's about to happen. And of course, you might be wrong about that. Just the longer you can observe that situation when you finally do find a bear, that I think your chances of success go up increasingly.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump in, John. I think you're right. And there's two kind of scenarios that tend to play out. One is you find sign and then end up encountering that bear through patience of sitting and or frequenting that area where you're seeing a lot of sign, and eventually you bump into one. That absolutely happens. I would say that happens for me, but there's so much bias based on style of hunting and what you do. Mm-hmm. That might be a quarter of the time. I would say three quarters of the time it's because you bump into one in transit, moving somewhere, and you see one from like a mile away. that tends to happen more often. And then that becomes more of a strategic, like, how do I move now? And then the one that you're talking about is more, well, there, that is part of the equation, but it's more strategic in the, where do I need to be and where do I need to stay? So they're two rather different scenarios, although you also have proved with your last bear that even if you are in the right spot and you do have a bear in a good situation, you still have to make a move to position yourself in that scenario to be in the right place at the final hour kind of thing.
Yeah, my bow hunting instincts really kicked in on that one when I saw the bear moving across that field. That, what do we call that? It was a cut block. It was an abandoned oil lease, I guess, or a gas lease that was just seeded in this thigh high clover. And it was dry and stocky from the previous fall. So it was impossible to stalk through. But the bear just started coming sort of my way. But yeah, I had to move, what, like 60 or 70 yards further down the trail towards the area that he was going. And then it's exactly what you said. It was just a function of, which I can be really bad at. Sometimes I get impatient, but just moving when the bear allows you to move and not moving when.
Yeah, I'm going to clarify because you're 100% correct. Absolutely, I agree with that. And I think it's something that takes practice. It took me years to get my head around, that's what that it means. So bears head up looking at you, you just freeze. You don't have to do anything special. It's not time to run off and find cover. Just don't move. Mm-hmm. Just be a statue and then wait. And it's like 20 seconds later, not even, it feels like forever, but it could be 5 seconds, then head back down and the bear's eating again. And it's kind of like, now you've got the pass to go to the bathroom, like off you go, time to move, bust a move. Go. Yeah. And I'm like eyes up at the thing and watching, and I'm moving until I see it start to change its down behavior and feeding behavior. And then whoop, but then I stop again as soon as it looks like maybe its head's going to come back up. Mm-hmm. But you really do have like a free pass to move as long as its head is down and feeding.
I want to get into, because I do have some specific ideas about hunting black bears in Washington State, for instance, where Jillian is, and BC. So there are definitely some different tactics there that I have experience with. But here in Alberta, with 84 bears per 1,000 square kilometers, yeah, what is that? A bear per 10 kilometers, if I do the math right?
That doesn't surprise me, actually. It sounds about right.
Yeah, if I did the math right. I think I did. And yeah, so a bear per 10 square kilometers. Like, think about that.
Yeah, that's like, why we have to cover some ground. That's why I'm not surprised we have to make like bust a move. Now, we have the benefit of experience in the areas that we hunt, that eventually you start to figure out what types of terrain are producing the types of vegetation that will draw them. It's not like you build an intuition around that. Although that also is true. It's mostly just around, it's kind of like mushroom spots or honey holes when you're fishing. It's kind of like you learn the terrain and go, that cut, for whatever reason, that cut line, the orientation, the vegetation on it is just greening up 2 weeks, 3 weeks before everything else. And that just is the place to be because there's no other options. So you start to see those vegetative traps and be able to geolocate them. And then you just go check on them, almost like checking crab traps or something, and just kind of wait to find a bear in them.
No, I agree. And I was going to bring up that point because I know that in May, I'm going to be spending, I actually have decided that I'm going to be spending 100% of my time on the road from camp to the Field of Dreams. And that's,
well, that could be a long walk.
Yeah. But if it's every day,
yeah,
you know, you don't have to walk the entire way every day, right? I can take the motorbike down 3/4 of the way towards the Field of Dreams, for instance, and then hike to the Field of Dreams and just spend the night there. Like, I still kind of think that exactly what you said, through experience, we know where these bears historically visit. And if I spend enough time there, that lightning will strike twice. I'm convinced of that. How convinced are you of that?
Well, tactic. I spent a lot of time, as far as putting into one spot, I don't, you know me, buddy. I don't have that patience, man. So I don't have the lived experience to tell you that that's how it works and that that will be the case. It seems to add up. Like, are there bears around there? I would say there's, like, you've proven that there's bears with giant genetics down that way too. So it's worth even kind of exploring that zone. Anyway, we've also harvested bears there in season one and season seven, I think,
yeah,
and season nine and what, eight, whatever. So, and season nine. So there's been a lot of action in that one spot. And I think there is something to be said for you don't need to cover tons of ground. You need to be covering ground that you know has some history of some sightings and then again, apply patience to that. Another big factor is weather, man, because the other thing that can happen on that road particularly is you can just get mudded up and that's the end of that for getting a bear out. So I've thought about that hard, long and hard too, even in the winter, whether we're getting to get deer out of a particular zone. If the snow's too bad, then that really restricts where you're going. And the mud plays those games with us where we live in May. So I haven't developed strategy too far along on my end just because of those wild cards of access. Don't know. We'll find out basically the first time we hit the bush and go, oh, okay, it's a dry year or it's spring is earlier or it's late. And so we can't access this or we can. So then you have to be a bit nimble on that side. That's my opinion. Yeah. Life challenges. Hey, exactly.
I was trying to think too of finding sign, and that's been something of an enigma for us as well, because we just, and again, I think it's a function of, you know, one bear per square kilometer, but we just don't, or 10 square kilometers, we just don't see a lot of sign. True or false?
I was thinking about that in prep for this chat. True and false. I would say in the spring, absolutely true. And it kind of makes sense to me because they're putting all that feed into them and their digestive tract just isn't cranking out the stuff yet. But have I seen like just heaps of piles of blueberry crap from black bears in the fall in September? Yeah, I've seen that. And have we harvested bears on that type of scenario? Yeah, a couple years ago we had on the camp road, there was a bear that was crapping all over the road and within a day it was dead.
That's right.
So does that happen? Is that how I'm going to find bears in the spring? I don't think so. But if I do find sign, that's mega good news. Like last year, before I harvested my bear, I found some major, huge bear crap that I thought, ooh, this is good news for me. I actually did some calling there that night. Didn't work, but sign is definitely a thing to go to zone in, at least know you're in the right area. It might not be something that you want to hunt necessarily. Like if you find a pile of bear crap on a road, I don't know if I'd want to sit on that exact spot the whole time, but at least you're in the game.
It is funny, hey, because I mean, I can think of a few instances where I've seen a fresh pile, or it's been a fresh Coke can pile, you know, where you're like, oh, big bear, and it's brand new and you're all geeked up about it. And then, yeah, we'd never see a bear the entire week. You know, driving back and forth, you know, in that area trying to see it. That's a way too, that is how we've been the most successful with our bear hunting. You kind of alluded to it earlier, Kevin, where just being mobile. So all of these cut lines and forestry roads and haul out roads, we've spent countless hours driving these roads, just looking for bears. And in some cases you can see the bear, you know, miles away. And I'm thinking of moose bear from last year. So that's definitely been an effective way of finding bears.
Yeah. The first bear I ever was in an encounter with on a hunt, which was in season one of From the Wild. I'd never been on a bear hunt in my life. And someone in the vehicle is like, bear. I'm like, what? And it was a black dot like a mile down the road. And I put glasses up. I'm like, that's a moose. And they're like, look past the moose. And like another mile past the moose was like three black bears feeding on the cut line. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you're kidding me. From one, that you could even see them from that far away, but two, they were just kind of busy doing their own thing. And we ended up making a move on those bears and two of them ended up dead. So that is absolutely a thing. And spotting bears is an exciting game because it's one of those things that there's like nothing happening, you're chatting a lot and all of a sudden like boom, everyone knows what's going on, like immediately
somebody in
the thing at the same time.
somebody in the truck yells bear,
yep, bear,
and it comes out just like bear. Just like that.
Yeah. With a severity and like an intensity that that doesn't apply to other species. And actually, I should probably mention that I've quit offering to bring new hunters bear hunting until they've got some experience under their belt. That's my personal take on that. Bears are a formidable thing, when you're in that encounter with them, especially if one gets shot and then you have to go track it, that is a very different situation than I shot myself a little young white-tailed doe or a rabbit or a grouse. A black bear can make you dead fast. Mm-hmm. I guess what made me think of that was that intensity, the severity, the gravitas of even spotting one is like as a cucumber, serious as you can be, game time, as I think I encounter when I'm hunting, is that, because that's not lost on me at all.
Oh yeah. No, there's something special about that. When I'm getting close to a bear, especially with my bow, there is definitely something in the back of my mind that is going, you know, this could go the wrong way really fast, but it's kind of the attraction I feel towards it as well, without being, you know, having a death wish or being all macho. It is just kind of fun knowing that there's an animal that, you know, what am I trying to say? Well, there's just an animal that can turn the table on you. It's exactly what you said. And it lends a different intensity to it as well. But let's get to the actual reason why we hunt bears. Maybe what was your discovery of black bear? The first time you hunted, or before you had killed a black bear, what were your thoughts on bear hunting?
I was a hard no. When it was pitched to me for From the Wild in season one, I was a hard no.
I remember that.
Yep. I just had no interest. And then we went baiting. I eventually was talked into going with some friends to kind of, I guess, check a bait pile and check trail cams. And there are, I don't want to crap on baiting because I honestly don't care if people choose that route, but it just wasn't for me. Sitting on a pile of dead anything or stinky food or sitting isn't for me anyway to begin with. So to sit on top of a heap of stinky rotting meat guts and stuff is like, not my jam. And then I also don't...
Would it be your jam if it was oats and honey?
Nah, it doesn't change anything for me. So that was again like this still isn't for me. And then we actually just decided that like this isn't kind of what I was with my buddy Jeff, and this wasn't kind of for either of us at the moment. So we just went for a drive, and then we started to see bears, and then it got real exciting real fast. And that's the first time that leaving the bait site was the first time we ever saw bears and harvested bears, and then I was hooked.
But that speaks to the intensity or the excitement of hunting. What about the food outcome? Talk to me about your discovery of that.
Early on, it was it's something to prove a little bit with proving that bears were food. And then that great, great adventure, ended in the first week when we realized, oh man, these things take flavors like pork. They're in the spring. When people ask, I tell them this. Bears taste in this area are super neutral. They're tougher in the spring, but they're super neutral in flavor. So they're almost the mildest thing around. The carcasses don't smell at all. Like they don't smell bad. They're the nicest smelling carcass in the bush. They again take flavors like pork, but they're a red meat. And in the fall, they'll have more flavor from their feed, but they then could have the first sow I ever shot had 100 pounds of fat on her. Like that's removed and weighed on a scale in a meat shop. So then you end up playing with bear fat and pastries and other things, and I've confit bear in itself and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so then the fall bear outcome is completely different. So to me, bears are exciting on the food outcome side. And then we started tanning or having the furs tanned at a local tannery. And then you realize really quickly that goes from like, oh, this is neat and cool, which it is. But it's also the most functional thing I've ever slept under in my entire life, and is an amazing blanket. So bears also offer that, and people are quick to think, well, yeah, you can do that with deer and moose and elk, and not in the same way. There's something about a thick, thick fur that is just so warm. It's kind of unbelievable. So Bears quickly became both very desirable food, both spring and fall. And then they became what we sleep under in camp. They became what we sleep under at home. We keep their skulls because they're neat. Yeah. There's just a lot going on there as far as what you can do with an animal.
I've got the claws in my freezer as well from that big bear. Oh, yeah. And I'm looking forward to doing something with that. I haven't quite figured it out. I think I would give away my 1970s vintage a little too hard if I made myself a bear claw necklace, right? Can you picture me in like with my shirt unbuttoned halfway down with my bear claw necklace? Is that something that you would want to see?
Yeah, well, I'm not one of the, I'm not.
There might be some set dressing going on the From the Wild episode if I showed up like that. But anyways, it would be cool to do something with those bear claws. I just haven't quite figured it out yet. If anybody out there has any ideas of what to do. You know, I thought of inlaying them in something, in a bow or something. So we'll see. We'll figure something cool out. But yeah, we talked about that last night too on the Hunter Conservationist podcast about just the utility and all of those things that you said came up. So I agree with you completely on that. It is quickly becoming my, I was asked this, if I could only kill one animal per year, what would it be? And for me, it was a toss up between a bear and a whitetail fawn. And of course, that's a horrific scenario to contemplate, only being able to kill one thing to eat. But yeah, bears right up there for me. And I know you're more of a generalist. You like everything. And so do I. But gosh, bear meat it's just so versatile, like you said, like sausages. It's so neutral that you can just make anything. I've got a project planned this weekend where I'm doing corned bear.
You're doing what?
Corned bear.
Corned bear. Oh, yeah, for sure. We've had season 3. I think we had Lex Boldreff made a Reuben sandwich out of black bear, and it was excellent. And whitetail responds really well to that kind of brining, smoking kind of process. I've been doing that a lot. I actually just did that in season 10 of From the Wild. I made a scrub birch smoked pastrami that was made from a whitetail dough that Mel had shot. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of that. That's a great way to, I don't know. It's just delicious. And if you feed that to anybody that doesn't like game, anything that's kind of got that type of brine and smoke on it, I think you can change some minds real fast. I wish I'd have played with it earlier in my big game cookery life. You know, instead it's taken 40 some odd years for me to figure that out, but that's a tasty one.
Okay, tell me a good bear hunting story, Kevin.
The cool part of hunting, I think, in general, is that I like instantly can remember every single bear hunt I've ever been on. It's amazing
there's been lots happens. Of cool ones. Well, I don't know. Just describe your last one. And the reason why I ask you that is because you can always glean something from a story. Like if you're new to bear hunting, if you're like Jillian or anybody listening out there that wants to spot and stalk bears, just by listening to some success and failure stories, you'll get something out of it. So,
yeah, I mean, if anything, the lesson last year. So here's the takeaway. If you're new to this and listening, listen hard. I had a decade of experience at this. Knew all the spots, knew the terrain, hit the weather pretty good. We were in the right window of time. You know, the third week of May here was pretty good. And we failed. And the only reason that I shot a bear was because I went back. I just, I came home for a few days, got my crap together, and then just put back in by myself. And honestly, this has happened actually like 2 or 3 times. Season 3, it happened too. Fail, pull out and go, man, we just can't make this happen. And then on the drive back into camp, see a bear to go back in. That happened in season 3. We shot 2 on the way to camp to go do some interviews in season 3. And then last year I was driving in just to go do a recon in the afternoon before putting in camp so I could hunt that evening. I didn't even get to camp. And I spotted a bear. And then I did. Then what happened is that another thing that I would say took a long, long time, if you're going to do drive, like if you're driving and seeing stuff, which you can say I'm not going to drive, that's fine, but you can't get to your hunting areas without driving. So there's just some driving you have to do when you're hunting. And if you bump into something, someone like John would say, I'm not going to shoot it. And he wouldn't. And kudos to you, but I would. So in this case, I drove by said thing that we'd been looking for like weeks and drove good and far away, like far enough away that in my head, I'm thinking, if I was a bear, would that vehicle no longer be a threat? And if the answer is, yeah, by now I would be like not caring. And he saw me drive by. He was at 40 yards off.
I've done that successfully too. That's a great tip. See the bear and just keep driving.
Just keep driving. You taught me that, man. You taught me that. It was years of like panic when that happens. Hit the brakes, panic. What do you do? Ah. And the answer is keep your cool and you just keep driving and you go, okay, game time. So I stalked back a half kilometer to that thing and slow, and the wind would gust and I'd move, and then the wind would stop and I'd stop. And then the wind would kind of push again and I'd go and to cover my nose.
Because you're in a noisy area?
I was on the edge of a road that had gravel on it. So it was like just trying to be quiet. I knew I had to move fast enough. Like a kilometer, you can't just belly crawl. I mean, you can, but I wanted to get there before he went off somewhere else, ideally. And there's, you know, a mid range between panicking and not moving at all. And I was in that mid range. And so just kept moving. But the challenge I had made for myself was that I had chosen to hunt that hunt with a open sights British 303. So I couldn't, it didn't help me if I saw him at 150 yards. That didn't, and you know what? I've come to terms in the last couple of years, man, if you can't get closer than 150 yards to an animal, then you need to hunt more. There's an asshole thing to say. But so I got to within 40 yards of it and got my sights up on it, and I'd shot my rifle enough to make that a easy chip shot, and that was it. And then the bear hunt was over, and Kevin looks like a hero. But the only reason that worked out was because I got back in my vehicle and I went back at it. And I think that would be what I would advise to people, is if you're frustrated that, like, well, I went and I had, my buddy told me I had a good spot and all these things, and I went for like a couple days. Sometimes we've gone for 5, 6, 7 days and and we've also been out in the field that long. And then all of a sudden it lights up. The night you shot your big bear, I shot a bear 2 hours before that. And then we saw more bears. We went 1 year, season six, we saw nothing. And then one day we saw nine. I don't know.
It
I don't know why.
It does seem to go in waves like that.
But I certainly believe that bear hunting, like fishing, like a lot of these activities, is, I've said this before on From the Wild, you have to be willing to put in the days of not winning to get to that day that's just like that the stories are made of, you know, that's just bonkers, where everyone's just winning and just the success seems easy. The only way for it to get easy is for you to be patient with the not easy parts. And then I've also, my next trick that I teach people is, the only way that I can do that comfortably and without going bonkers is by making the camps really fun, so that you're just kind of happy to be out there hanging with your friends anyway. And that way you're there for that third day, for that fourth day, because you can, because you're comfortable, you're having a great time. And so then you go camp a lot and do a lot of hunting. And then you'll find that, like, wow, I'm really successful all of a sudden because I'm spending the days in the field. It is a math equation. It is. It's a function of my ocean fish I will catch next week is a function of whether I go to the ocean or not. And after that, it's a function of how many hours I spend on the water. And you can talk about tackle and rods and all that stuff. And yes, that's another factor. But I'm a big believer that the macro is what decides. And that's a powerful thing. I have a lot of friends in the series, and it's easy to look at their successes and failures and attribute that easily as me being the observer of, well, how much did you fish this winter? How much did you bear hunt last spring? How much did you spend looking for that whitetail buck? Because if the answer is I didn't bother going, or I didn't go, or I spent 2 days and not 12 days, well, the person who spent 12 days is going to have a lot more success at doing that, whatever that thing is, than you did.
That is such an important message. You've been so good at that, and you've put so much effort into the camp life, which I love. And I've sort of adopted that philosophy of, and we've talked about it plenty, but it's just having nice stuff in camp. It's having a nice camp. It's having nice food. It's having nice drink. It's having the happy hour that we've established over the years, you know, that joyful conversation that you just look forward to having that sidecar that evening and some potato chips, you know, as you're cooking dinner, things like that. You're absolutely right. And I have actually commissioned an article on specifically that for Traditional Bowhunter magazine for this spring. And that's based off of the things that you've done and the things that we've talked about many times, which is just make that camp comfortable and fun. And then it, you know, it just doesn't have to be miserable. You know, what are you trying to prove? Like how tough you are by being, how miserable you are in camp or, you know, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and I want to add one thing to that, that one layer, because I think you and I have similar taste, and it's probably one of the reasons we are compatible camping. We both like kind of older ways of doing things, often because they work way better. We like older gear. We like, I don't know, we like a lot of the same stuff. So when you say, you know, have nice gear and have nice stuff, have nice food, have nice drinks, I think you could watch from the wild and it might imply that you have to be drinking gin martinis that you made yourself and fancy food. And I don't think that needs to be the case. I think whatever, I think the word nice, and I think you did mean it this way, but I just want to be clear on how I feel about this. Nice doesn't mean nice according to me or according to some Michelin star chef. Nice just means whatever makes you happy. Like what gets you pumped on a, if you're going to stay home and barbecue something and have a beer or a glass of wine or whatever you might be interested in, whatever that is, just do that in the field. And if anything, that's the time to splash out and have that really cool beer, or have that really cool bottle of wine or whatever it is, or that really gorgeous steak that you are into. That's the time to really like milk it, that enjoyment out of that, those types of things. And
I would, I think, say, sorry,
I grew up eating, I mean, I grew up eating hot dogs and drinking garbage. Yeah. Like when we were out in the field with my family, that's how we ate.
Until I was 52.
Yeah. We ate whatever, like rudimentary basic stuff that it was the easiest. And only exactly, and only until I was an older guy did I realize, wow, okay, well, if you make more than we have the saying now, or at least I do, make more than zero effort. Like if you think, well, how can I make that just a little bit better? Jeff Singer coined that term in season 3 or 4 of From the Wild, just the constant camp improvement concept of just be a little bit self-analytical and go, well, today was great, but what would have made today just like even better? And sometimes it's like, man, I wish I wouldn't run out of coffee, or I wish I was warmer last night sleeping. And for me, it's about checking in on those things, checking in with yourself, checking in with your friends and your family, whoever you're hunting with, and then just leveling up next time. So that every year your camp's situation is just better and better and better. And I haven't hit peak camp yet. I haven't sat there and gone, well, this is a bit too much. Let's dial it back. And it's not about adding, and it's not about bougie, but it's just about being mindful of trying to have a nice time with the people you're there with.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, that I could build on that thought and just go have something to look forward to every day. If it is, like, look forward to climbing into your warm sleeping bag to have a really comfortable sleep because you're tired, because you have a nice sleeping setup. So pay attention to that, you know, make yourself comfortable, bring in the bear hide or the big boy sleeping bag or whatever. And of course, some of that is limited by how you're getting into camp, I suppose, right? If you're backpacking 25 kilometers, you're going to be a little less comfortable in camp. But I would still say, and you were good at this again, when we did that big hike last year into Tombstone, there was still something to look forward to every day. There was, you know, we were talking about it on the trail. Ooh, I've got a chocolate bar for tonight. And it was that little tiny, like a, you know, $2.50 chocolate bar that we were all just, you know, really looking forward to that evening by the campfire.
Or you're whipping out some limoncello or whatever, someone to make some extra effort for a meal. Yeah, all those things really do, they matter. They matter a lot.
Sure, you can be miserable in the cold waiting on a bear to come that never comes. And then, but you know that, oh, okay, this is going to be a good night. You know, Kevin's making sidecars and, and we've got, you know, Pam's Donuts or whatever. Like, it can be literally anything, and it doesn't have to be extravagant, but it gives you that little something to look forward to. I couldn't agree more. That's been a real game changer for me. I just want to talk briefly about where we hunt. So we're hunting in the boreal, as we mentioned. The terrain is relatively flat. We're not seeing a big sort of pattern. I know if I was baiting bears, I'd be looking for water. I'd be looking for frogs singing, because where there's frogs singing, there's frogs. Usually in that area where there's frogs singing, there's beavers. And usually where there's beavers and frogs, there's green things growing. So all three of those things mean that there should be bears nearby. So that's, you know, so we have beaver ponds and lazy meandering streams. That's where I would be keyed in on. That doesn't seem to be a pattern of where we see bears regularly. But if I was baiting, that's where I'd be. So I guess my point is that where we're hunting, it seems more random. The encounters seem more random. They're just, like we've said, you know, there's very few bears, so you're just running into bears at random. But when I was hunting in BC, I suspect it's similar in Washington. The bears are congregated. So in Washington State, for instance, there are, oh, I just closed that window down. There is about 35,000 bears in Washington State. So roughly the same number of bears in the in one third the square miles. Wow. And then to further concentrate that bear population will be the mountains, because black bears are not in the mountains. They are down in the valleys in the spring. So what we were doing, and I know what my friend Jeff Lander does, who has an outfitting company in BC, they are hunting these fields and meadows and pastures down in the valleys, and they're sitting up high and watching these bears from a distance. And so that would be my number one suggestion to people, is get up high. If you're hunting in these more mountainous areas, get up high where you can overlook things that are green, and I can almost guarantee you that if you spend enough time doing that, you will see little black dots down in the valley, and then you can make your plan and go get them. And it's funny, on Vancouver Island last year with Jade Burke, we were doing the exact same thing. We were getting up on those high ridges, a little different there because we were just hunting the open cut blocks. And again, I think the problem that we had then was we just didn't see a lot of green. It was a late spring, but again, we were up high. So I think that's the key. If you can get up high and be glassing down in green spots that are lower in elevation. And it was startling, Kevin. We would drive up these logging roads on Vancouver Island, and then all of a sudden you just feel the air getting colder and colder and colder, and then you'd come around one bend and boom, there's snow blocking the road ahead of you. But yet down at camp, it was, you know, plus 20 and green stuff everywhere. And then we were seeing bear sign at exactly where you would guess you would see bear sign, which was at that transition. Because if you can imagine a bear, you know, with all that fur, and I guess, you know, I wouldn't want to be down where it's plus 30, I guess, right? And where there's, you know, bugs and mosquitoes and things. So they were just following that transition. So anyways,
interesting.
That would be my advice for folks. In the three times that I've hunted bears in mountainous provinces or mountainous terrain, it was always get up high and try to glass down into the green stuff, as opposed to just wandering around at random, which is what we tend to do. I'm going to let you go here in a little bit, because I know that you're busy packing and you want to relax today. But what about aftercare of bears? So we've talked about the many ways that we've been successful with spot and stalk bear hunting. Give us just a rundown of, for folks that are new to this, what is your MO as far as care of bear after post-harvest?
Well, I'll use last year as an example. Bears down. So I got to, one filming the whole process, but whilst doing that, gutted it And then I actually took it, I used its fur as a ground sheet and quartered it. And I took it into five.
Just to go back a minute. So just for people that might be new to this, Kevin, you skin, describe how you used it as a ground sheet. Did you skin the whole thing or did you skin half of it and roll it
over? Yeah, you start at the paws and you get the, you know, back from the arms and off the shoulders. And eventually once you do that on all the sides and the head, you end up with kind of, you know, the I guess it's backbone along the ground. And so you can kind of roll it side to side on its fur or on its hide. And disconnect it to the extent that then you can peel off the or cut away the shoulders, which don't have a joint and they're very easy to, like other game animals. Bears are not built differently than a deer in that respect. So the shoulders come off really easily. And then I carry a paracord kit with me now when I'm hunting. So I just have pre-tied ties, tie them up into a tree. So they're instantly cooling because by that time in May, it was like 15 above or something at the moment. It was going to be -3 that night. And then took off the back legs, like you would a chicken, kind of get into that joint of the hip, and cut around the back pelvic area and then get the whole leg off and hang them up. And all you're left with is this tubular chunk, which is still pretty heavy because it's got all the backbone and the loins, and the pelvic bone and stuff. But that's the pieces. This was a smaller bear. So those were the pieces I took it into. And then I took it back to camp and I just hung it up and I decided to stay that night because I could have done a lot of things like go home, pack it, go home, do a bunch of moves and try and solve a lot of things. But the best thing I could do was it was already 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. And as you know, like a lot of weather and time is going to decide a lot of your moves at that stage. It was about to, within 2 or 3 hours is going to get real cool on me. So I thought there's no better thing I could do than just hunker down and stay here in the bush overnight. I didn't have a tent with me, but I just stayed in the vehicle and, let the thing chill down to zero overnight. And then the next day I could do whatever I want. Cause once it's chilled down that cold, everything's good. Like for transport the next day, you have hours of buffer to make, you know, to be deciding what your next moves after that would be.
Oh, Richard just left. Gerard has been there the whole time. And so I just invite you guys. Sorry, that was rude of me to not acknowledge that you guys were with us. So I appreciate you joining us backstage there. I don't know. I've never tried this before, Gerard. But if you do have the ability to type a message, you can certainly go ahead and do that. I think this is kind of fun. I can see us the next time we do this. Inviting more people backstage. I didn't make a big production of it out of inviting a whole bunch of people, but it might be kind of fun to get some questions popping up as we go. So this was a bit of an experiment tonight. Kevin,
I do like that idea.
It's kind of fun. I think that I'm going to play with that a little bit more. Hey, what, as far as butchering black bear, is there a process that's a little different for you from whitetails? And I'm talking about specifically once you get the primal cuts back home, how do you treat them when you're at home?
That's an interesting question that I haven't thought about. And the answer is, yeah, they're way different because I don't treat them at all like a deer. No, I don't dry age black bear in the same way. And I think part of it has to do with spring bears are quite tough. So you think maybe dry aging would be a thing. But they're inherently tough. Two, I know I'm not going to cook them to mid rare or do anything along those lines anyway. So I'm not really looking for tenderness.
Why?
Trichinosis, the possibility of trichinosis in black bears that does not exist in deer. So a deer, I can just like eat right off the carcass and make a tartare or a carpaccio and off I go. Black bear, you could do that and you could end up very, very, very sick with a parasite in you that you don't want. So, because I have options, I don't piss around with that. So that means that most of the black bear that I have is going to get braised, especially because it is a bit tougher in the spring, in my opinion. It's going to get braised or into a ground preparation or something along those lines anyway, for the most part.
I can't think of much else to talk about here. We've kind of gone through a lot of the how-to. I feel, do you have anything, like if you were talking to somebody new that was wanting to get their first bear, is there anything that we've missed as far as spot and spot goes?
I only think the toughest part is just to learn where to begin. And It's tough because I'm so biased by where we live. It's not hard for me to access an area where land ownership permissions aren't a problem. It's like we're on Crown land, so super in easy Canada. To get. We can just go hunting wherever we want for bears in the bush for the most part. But that just know that it gets a lot easier. So all the effort that you put in to get to finding an area, not even a spot, you're not looking for like the spot that you're going to shoot your bear every year, although those do exist too. But you're looking for an area where you can find a few different little zones to hunt, you know, depending on what the wind's doing or depending on, you know, of, I don't know, just so you have a variety of places to check out and collect those and know that it's not, that part's not the easy part. And then once you've got a few spots to check out, which may involve asking some peers, asking around, doing a lot of legwork. And sometimes often we find our spots by accident because the place that we bear hunt regularly now, that wasn't, I don't know if that was the objective when we first went, maybe it was, but we do a lot of other things in that area, but we just, by being there, we realized, oh man, there's sure a lot of bears here. And so you kind of start to figure out your own spots. And I guess the point being just, that's not an easy process. And if someone like us makes it sound easy, know that there was many a day in camp where I was convincing people to stay and hunt because there are bears and we will hunt, kill one, because there's a lot of days of like, man, this isn't working. Let's just go home. So, find an area that you are confident there's bears and then just have the patience to stick with it.
You and I won't talk to each other again here for a while. You're leaving when? The 10th, did you say?
Yeah, I've got a big fancy award show to go to been nominated for 3 awards by the Academy of Canadian Film and Television. And then, so I'm going to be in Toronto for that. And then I'm landing and then the next morning wheels up to go with a sea kayak on my roof to hit the West Coast sea kayaking for 3 weeks.
Nice. I, at the same time, on the 15th, well, actually now the 13th, will be headed down to southern BC to hunt turkeys with Mark Hall, the Hunter Conservationist podcast creator, be down there for a week. Then, sans Kevin, I'll be at bear camp looking for bears. So, yeah, I'm going to go early and often. Maybe not that early. I think starting May 1st, I wanted to go hard and make a few trips and just see if I can't get close. We have the option of 2 bear tags here in Alberta. So, and then May 11th, I believe, I am wheels up to the Yukon with Aaron to go fly fishing for Arctic grayling. So I'm looking forward to that. And then you and I will be, the next time we see each other, we'll be in bear camp, won't it?
That's right. Yeah, you bet. For the latter half of May, you and I will be seeing a lot of each other looking for looking for bears and rabbits and all the other fun things we chase.
Ooh, rabbits with the bow. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that very much so. Some new things happening with the show, everybody. I appreciate everybody's patience with my lack of forethought in getting the regular sort of documentary style episodes put out for you guys. But I don't know. I think I've done a pretty good job, if I don't say so myself, with some pretty interesting guests that we've had. You know, I think the plan is to just record more content in the field this season so that I can spread it out a little bit more through the winter months and then do. Thank you very much, Kevin, for joining us today. You can go relax, and I look forward to seeing your exploits on Instagram. And people can find you on Instagram with @fromthewild, all one word, CA, correct? Right? Where can we buy From the Wild episodes?
The easiest way to get into the show is just hit our website at fromthewild.ca, and it'll have links, all the different seasons linked up to Vimeo pages that that host the pay-per-view there. We have had the show on Wild TV, but decided not to go that route any longer. So it's all been pay-per-view since day one and continues to be the best fit for me.
All right, Kevin. Thank you so much, my friend.
Good to see you, bud.